Welcome to episode number 10. Thank you guys for joining. Today I sit down with Oscar Hernandez, three-time Grammy Award winner. He's been long considered one of the most gifted and prominent pianists and arrangers on the contemporary Latin and Latin jazz and also salsa music scene. Oscar's career as a professional began in the 70s, performing and recording with such seminal artists as Ismael Miranda, Rey Barreto, Celia Cruz, Conjunto Libre, Pete El Conde Rodriguez, and Grupo Folclorico. Oscar was responsible for charting the musical course of the Ruben Blades band Seis de Solar, increasingly in demand as a pianist, arranger, and producer. The Bronx native has produced such artists as Ruben Blades, Paul Simon, Willie Colon, Daniel Ponce, Rafael de Jesus, Eddie Torres, Phil Hernandez, Steve Kroon, Juan Luis Guerra, etc. Today in the podcast, we talk about his achievements as an arranger, composer, band leader for Spanish Harlem Orchestra. We talk about what continues to inspire him as a musician. As a band leader, Oscar has worked with some of the best musicians in the world within Spanish Harlem Orchestra. And we talk about what it takes to manage such a big band when it comes to scheduling. I think you guys are going to enjoy episode number 10 with Oscar Hernandez. For those of you that are at the NAMM show, happy NAMM 2019. Hopefully you guys are taking advantage of seeing all your friends, your mentors, your heroes, and yeah, making it fun.
If you're listening via Spotify, I invite you to follow Sir Kevin Says. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can show your support by subscribing and rating the show 5 stars. Alternatively, you can watch the video version of this and every other episode on my YouTube channel, Kevin Michael Chong, or visit my website, www.sirkevinchong.com, and view or listen to them that way.
Episode number 10, here you go. Welcome to episode number 10. I'm sitting here today with Oscar Hernandez, pianist, composer, band leader, and three-time Grammy Award winner. Oscar, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here today, Oscar. It's been a little bit of a while since we got together, hasn't it?
Yeah, since we were at Shepherd at Cornell, and I was doing the teaching thing there, and
yeah.
You did really great as one of the percussion students, so kudos to you.
Thank you, man. Really appreciate it, especially coming from someone like yourself. What have you been up to these days? What are you working on?
We're working on promoting the new record with Spanish Harlem Orchestra,
right.
Which I'm proud to say just got nominated for a Grammy.
And congratulations.
Setting up a tour. Yeah, we'll find out February 10th, but setting up the tour dates that we have coming up for that. I'm also working on my new quintet project, which we had already a couple of rehearsals. That will be based in here in LA, and Spanish Harlem Orchestra, as you know, is based in New York. The
right.
band is from New York, and they travel from there. I travel from here, but those are my two main projects. Within that, I'm doing a little bit of producing for people. I'm doing a little bit of arranging for people, a little bit of playing every now and then. Apart from those projects, you know, when they call me to do something that interests me,
yeah.
All music, you know, it's all good.
Nice. So Oscar, let's take it back to the beginning of your career. How did it all get started? When did you find out music is the one thing that you wanted to dedicate your life to?
Well, I grew up at a special time, you know, during the Latino cultural revolution that was happening in the city of New York. I'm from New York City, born and raised. Mm-hmm. From the Bronx, South Bronx, I'm proud to say. And when I grew up, you know, that music, Latin music, was heard from every other window or every other door that, you know, I passed by in my neighborhood. Not to mention my older brothers. I come from a big family, a family of 11, mm-hmm. and they were all older than me. So I would see them getting ready, you know, to go out partying on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday to one of the many clubs that existed back in those days with a lot of live music.
Yeah.
So. I started playing, going back even further, I started playing trumpet at the local boys club. And soon thereafter, a couple of years later, somebody gave me a piano. And I started doodling and started messing around. And before you know it, I was, you know, entrenched in learning that instrument and hanging out with local neighborhood musicians, and they would teach me, and I would learn from whoever I could at that time, and started playing professionally at 16. So it was meant to be. And for me, at 18, I got probably the hottest gig in the city of New York, working with one of the great salsa singers named Ismael Miranda. Mm. And during those days, he was the most popular young artist. They called him El Niño Bonito.
Yeah.
He was probably like 3 or 4 years older than me. But we were working 5, 6, 7 days a week.
Wow.
And it was the beginning of an amazing, obviously now looking, you know, ahead 40 years, an amazing career that I've had in this music, playing with all the best people and afforded the opportunity to travel all over the world,
yep.
you know, with some amazing artists that I've been blessed and fortunate to have played with. But those days, I tell people, you know, you couldn't pay for the education, the education that I got as a young musician playing with some of the most amazing musicians when I was 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. At 23, I was already playing with Conjunto Libre,
wow.
with Grupo Folklorico.
Yes.
Soon thereafter, I got the gig with Ray Barreto. I did 6 records with Ray that I'm really proud of. Wow. And played with so many people on the scene as a pianist and as a sub sometimes. I would sub with Tito Puente. I would sub with Machito. Wow. I played with Celia Cruz. So an amazing career looking back, you know, having had that opportunity at such a young age, again, to play with, you know, all the incredible musicians that I've been blessed to play with.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Was it a little bit like nerve-wracking when you first started, you know, like you were afraid to mess up, or how was that experience? Like, because you started so young at 18, you know, you're still trying to figure out your life, get that going.
Totally. You know, as a young person, we all go through some deep insecurities about who we are,
right.
about what we can. And I was basically self-taught. Although later on, I went to school and I was learning, you know, like I said, at the hands of some incredible musicians.
Yeah.
When I started playing with Ray Barreto, the arrangements were made by Louis Cruz, Eddie Martinez, Gil
That's
Lopez,
incredible.
Who were some of the most amazing arrangers on the scene.
Yeah.
And that in itself was a school, was a university.
Yeah.
So, but I was basically self-taught. Then later on, I did go to college and I got a degree in music.
Okay.
But it paled in comparison to the experience that I was
exactly.
getting with all these incredible musicians that I was playing with, you know, early on. So it was intimidating, and you would go through your own insecurities about your playing because, you know, like I said, I was mostly self-taught, and you always wonder, you're always comparing yourself because you hear a lot of so many amazing musicians. But, you know, it's just part and parcel of what it is as a young musician. Anywhere you are, I think, you know, you have to go through that and find yourself and find your path and keep working on it.
Yeah.
You know?
Was there a point where you wanted to give up on music?
Yeah. Actually, there was a time where I remember my older sister was taking she was going back to school to get a degree to become a teacher. And I said, well, you know what? What's in store for me is a you know as far as security, as a musician, and I even took the test,
wow,
to become a teacher, but the truth of the matter is, I think that's just part of like all the insecurities that we go through, and the biggest thing you know if I had to tell people is perseverance. Sometimes
yeah.
you have to persevere through all of those you know all of those times and all of those situations. To find your path, and you know, happily I persevered, and really proud of what I've been able to create in all the years that I've been involved with music. You know,
yeah.
looking back now, it's pretty amazing all the stuff that I've done, including the last 15 years with my own band
yeah,
and putting
Spanish
my
Hall.
Own stamp
yep.
on the music in terms of where I feel the music should be. But you know, early experiences are you know for me working with. People that I mentioned, I mean, working with Machito when I think I was like 21, and I worked with the great Machito. You know, I remember going to his house because I didn't have a car at the time, or he would give me a ride to where we were going with my keyboard, and I put it in his trunk. People like that. Celia Cruz, I'll never forget the first
wow.
time I worked with Celia. I was, again, 21, and they called me to accompany her in Toronto. So, and I mean, obviously I knew her music, But I had never played with her. So I go to the airport in New York. I go to JFK, and I look over, and I see her. She's about, you know, in front of me. I go, wow, that's Celia. Awesome.
What color was her hair?
Well, what was amazing was that I said, well, she looks kind of old. You know? She must have been in her early 50s. Yeah. Here I am, 21. And I said, oh, she looks kind of old. Because, you know, when she's at the airport, she was the most amazingly beautiful superstar I've ever met. So I went and introduced myself. She said, ah, mijito, que mucho gusto, encantado, un placer, bienvenido, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, she wasn't in her getup. So we went to Toronto, and there was a band from Toronto. So I was going to go play the piano. And that, you know, we rehearsed the music. That night, you know, she gets up where the band is set up on the stage. They announce that she comes out, bam! With this most amazing outfit, you know, dressed to the T, the electricity, I mean, was so thick you can cut it with a knife.
Yeah.
It was, and her sense of drama, entertainment, professionalism was, I mean, one of the most indelible experiences that I've had in my life as a young musician. Yeah. What better teacher than that? She proceeded to just captivate the whole entire, you know, concert, the whole audience and the musicians. I was going like, and not only that, the funny thing was that when she came out, I was like, wow, Celia looks fine. Yeah. So it's got from going to like, she looks old, yeah, to like, damn, she looks good. Yeah. So that was an amazing experience. And I had a bunch of experiences like that with, you know, other artists that I was able to perform with. And then after that, you know, I got to perform with her so many times, yeah, on so many different occasions with different bands, and she was always the same. You know, the most gracious. I wouldn't see her for 3 or 4 years, and she'd see me, Oscarito, ¿cómo está, mijito? Ven acá. You know, she'd give you a big hug. And another example of her, you know, her persona, you know, we'd be on tour in Europe, and they tell the band, okay, the bus leaves at 7:30, you have to be on the bus. We'd show up at like 7:20 with our bags to get on the bus, and her husband would be the first. They would be sitting on the bus already, buenos dias.
Wow.
All dressed up to the max. So, yeah, that was, you know, an example, you know, of somebody who was really dedicated to her craft, yeah, and to her persona and to her art. So I had numerous examples like that with other artists that were fierce about, you know, what they were about and their passion.
You served as music director for a time with Ruben Blades.
Yeah, I was Ruben's musical director and pianist and arranger for 13 years with Seyce Solal and Son del Solal.
Mm-hmm.
And an amazing experience as well. I mean, Ruben is like my brother to this day. I mean, I love him to death. We've had our good and bad moments, but generally, he's one of the most amazing artists that I've had the, you know, pleasure and blessings to be able to spend time with, not only as a pianist arranger, but as a friend, because we traveled the world together. That was a great experience, and little did I know the influence that band would have, you know, in the world scheme of things.
Right.
Because anywhere in South America, everybody, I go to South America and there's people, you know, with like, this is your life in terms of all the stuff that I've done, including live concerts. And Ruben was, you know, one of the incredible, huge feathers in my cap that I'm proud of to this day.
Nice, nice. When it comes to live performances and then trying to bring that same energy to a record, to a recording, what are the differences for you?
Well, the thing is, you know, with Spanish Harlem Orchestra, we just, you know, recently released our 6th CD.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it just got nominated for a Grammy.
Congratulations.
And I tell people, if it was baseball, we'd have a batting average, lifetime batting average of 500. You know, if we win, that would be 3 Grammys out of 6.
Right.
But Spanish Harlem Orchestra is one of the few bands, maybe the only one, I think. I don't know who else does it. Maybe the Mambo Legends do it, that records live without a click track.
Wow.
So we go in there, there's no click track. We rehearse the music, you know. I go to New York and I spend, you know, a week just rehearsing the music. But those guys are such great musicians too. that they hone in to exactly what needs to be done, and then we'll discuss it. You know, I'm very open, and I accept everybody's opinion, and ultimately I make the final decision.
Right, right.
But so we'll do all the music live, and then we'll with the vocals, but we'll redo the vocals.
Got
you
it.
Because
okay.
I don't want we need to take our time to make sure that we get the vocal qualities and they say the things that they need to say on the record. But the music is done live. I mean, if we have to fix something, we go back and say, hey, let's do this horn section again, you know. And but the essence of the music, there's no click track, and everybody's playing off each other. And they have so much experience and so much taste, you know, my percussion section,
yes.
which is not only Luisito, George Delgado, and Jorge Gonzalez, and our bass player, they're top of the heap. And also, there's nothing. These guys have so much experience. And Luisito has been there and done it all. So he's pretty, you know, clear on what he has to do. But, I take pride on the fact that we all are clear about being, you know, in tune with the task at hand. You know, we'll go through the music, and I'll bring the arrangements in. Mm-hmm. And then we discuss, hey, what about here? Somebody will say, what about if we put this here? What about if we repeat that, take the repeat out? Stuff like that. And then we go. And I'm a stickler for doing one or two takes. There are people who go and do 10 takes, and then they'll sit down and listen to 10 takes. I don't have the patience, the energy, or the time for that.
Right.
I'll do a take that I feel this is a take. And if we have to fix it here and there, that's it. The energy, the swing is there.
Yeah.
Let's do that. That's just the way I work.
Right, right.
And it's just more cost effective and more efficient to work that way. But it's funny, recently, I just was in New York about 2 months ago producing a record for my vocalist, Marco Bermudez. Nice. And I decided to, the issue is how are you going to do it conceptually? So I decided to, because I had all the arrangements here on my computer, so I sent the engineer the MIDI tracks, a MIDI file.
Okay.
And we went into the studio and used that. And we took the horns out. We recorded, in other words, we recorded with a click, but it was kind of. And I said, let me experience how this is going to be. Those guys, the percussion players, are so great that they know how to put the swing on that click, you know what I mean? Like it made me think, wow, maybe we should be doing the records this way, you know? Interesting. It all comes down to the quality of players that you have and that you associate yourself with, you know?
As a band leader, what do you think is the most important quality to have? Because you're handling so many different personalities. You have a band of what, 15 or so? Or
13. There's 13 of us and 13 people traveling, 13 hotel rooms, 13 airline tickets. It gets to be pretty daunting and pretty exhaustive. Exhaustive?
Exhausting, yeah.
Exhausting?
Yes. I'll look it up later.
I'm pretty exhausted by the end of it. Put it this way. Well, I think the big part is to have musicians that beyond music get it in terms, I've gone through a lot of incredible musicians in my band that are no longer here. You know, it's time for them to move on. It's time for them to go in a different direction. They have their own agenda. I said, hey, you have your own agenda. I won't tell him this, but I said, I know he has his own agenda. God bless you. Make a band.
Yeah.
You become a band leader so I could go, yes. So they could see, they can walk in my shoes and I see how. Because, I try to get it right, and my intentions are always really good. I'm really clear on that. I don't have the best delivery sometimes because I'm really...
straightforward.
I'm really straightforward, really transparent, sometimes rough around the edges. But I know that my intentions are really well-meaning for everybody. It's not self-serving for me. So I try to get it right for everybody. And I want musicians who understand that, you know. And I tell them, I don't need you to be my friend when everything is great. I need you to be my friend when something goes wrong and you understand. That's when I need you to be on my side and go, hey, no worries, bro. I got your back. Because I would do the same.
Right.
You know what I mean? Especially if I know that you're coming from a genuine, real place of, of integrity.
Yeah.
So that's really important for me as a band leader. It gets... to be tiresome, to deal with all the aspects. But I look at it, you know what? Tiresome, schmarsome. I'm blessed to be doing what I'm doing. really. And we get up on a stage, and the band just like kicks it.
Yeah.
And then when I'm, you know, and I know because I can feel the power of the audience. I could feel when the audience is going like,
yeah.
And I could feel at the end of the show, I'm there signing CDs and greeting people, and people coming up to me like, oh my God, you know, I've had people. A while back, we were at the Jazz Alley in Seattle, and I could see this lady coming up to me like slow motion. I'm there with the manager talking, and she says, "I just want you to know, this is the best live show I've ever seen in my life." And I said, "Bernie, the manager, did you hear that?" He went, "Yep, I heard it." Okay, well, I want to make sure you heard it. So that's the power of music, and we have that power. You know, people see it live because it's one thing to hear it on record, but when you're in front of that type of power and it's translating to people, there's no substitute for that. You know, I tell people, you know, we live off this. I make money, but the money I spend it. It's not about the money,
right?
It's about the power of the music and what we're able to create and what we're able to transcend in terms of. Tuning people on to, the art aspect of how beautiful our music is and music in general.
Yeah.
I want people to sit down and appreciate the music from a listening point of view.
Right.
I want people to appreciate the beauty of the arrangements, the compositions, the chemistry between the different sections of the band, how the horns interact with the singers interact with the rhythm section, rhythm section interacts with the horns. You know, that's the beauty of the music, and I want people to appreciate. I mean, because one of the things about sometimes dancing is that it trivializes the art form, and I don't mean to undermine dancing, because I know it is dance music, and that is important. But for me as a musician, that's not what drove me to the music. It was just the actual musicianship, listening to great musicians, listening to the arrangements, listening to how people play, listening to each instrument, the interaction of the instruments together. I mean, all of those things. It wasn't dancing, me personally, that drove me. Although, back in the day, when we used to go to clubs, I mean, obviously you go, "Oh, that's a fine girl. I'm going to pick her out to dance." Or you wait for the band to play a bolero, which nobody does anymore, a ballad. That was unique to my era, and it was a beautiful time for music.
Yeah. Do you have any other passions besides music?
Sports.
Sports.
I'm a big sports fan. I'm a big, being from New York, I can't help but being a New York team guy, which, it's not a good time to be a New York team guy. Because right now in basketball, our Knicks are like, oh, my man. God. And the football teams, as you know. I'll spend a lot of time, watching sports and ESPN. And other than that, just art in general. I love, going to museums every now and then and checking art from a different perspective than music, stuff like that. I'm pretty much engrossed in my world with music, and it takes up a lot of my time. Family, I love my family. I have four kids, and I'm blessed to have four kids. My two sons are in New York. I have two daughters here in L.A. So that's about it.
Yeah. Having accomplished all the things you have, and trying to balance time for your family, how has that process been like?
Well, it's never easy because, especially when you're traveling. But I try to make the time count when I'm here, with my daughter. I'm with her. My older daughter is on her own, but, my younger daughter's with me. And my sons, when I'm in New York, I try to make time count. I'm always there. Sometimes it makes me, I have to laugh because I call them, say I'm going to be in New York, and they say, "Well, we're busy." I'm going like, "Dude, I'm only going to be in New York 3 days. Come on. Like, you got to make time. Like, I'm working, I'm doing this," because they have their own lives, So I really get on their case. But we'll spend, whether it be an incredible half a day or incredible dinner or lunch, time together and laugh and bond, or we'll spend time with, in my brother's house with, their uncle, and try to make the time count.
Nice.
Whatever time I have.
Yeah. What made you move out here to LA? When did you arrive to Los Angeles?
A woman.
There you go.
I was getting divorced in New York, and I met somebody who was living out here.
Okay.
And we're now divorced again, you know what I mean? But it's fine. You know, yeah. We produced a beautiful daughter. I have a 12-year-old daughter. Nice. I'm really proud of, and she's blessed to be involved in music as well. She's a budding great pianist. But for me, I've always loved Los Angeles when I came here, and I used to come here a lot.
Yeah.
For one thing, the sun, the weather.
The weather. And well, today wouldn't be.
Well, yeah, today is the last 3 days. It's amazing. I'm going like, wow, I've never seen this in LA.
Exactly.
3 days of rain.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is the sun, one thing I do know, the sun has a positive effect on my chemistry. Mm. And it's the reason I love living in LA. That being said, I mean, if I couldn't go back to New York, I'd probably be miserable. You know what I mean? Because there's something about New York that, for me, it's home.
Yeah.
And not to mention family and friends, there's a dynamic there that doesn't exist here or exists on a different level. But the sun and the weather is pretty amazing out here. And like I said, it affects my chemistry, and I feel that I need to have that in my life. Yeah. So I'm happy to still be here. I don't know if I'll be here forever, but for now I'm here and I'm happy here, and I live in a beautiful place. So
yes, you do. Yeah.
All is good.
Yeah. When we were at Cornell, almost about a year and a half ago now, I remember, in the percussion class, you were such a stickler to sticking to the chart. We would read these charts, and you had the ensemble, and we had all different types of students. We had students from Korea. We had another one from Mexico. When you go about handling these courses, teaching any time that you have, what's the most important thing that you want your student to grasp from your class?
Well, I mean, I have to say, teaching is not what I've been doing. I've never had the time. I would love to do it and maybe get an opportunity to do it on somewhat of a, part-time or maybe even full-time basis. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'd like to impart, to them somehow the passion that I have, the music that moved me when I was young. Because when I look back at those, times and those moments, it was, the camaraderie that we created as young musicians hanging out and listening to music and getting to play and jam. That was, really beautiful. And it was the impetus for me becoming a full-time musician. So I would like to somehow impart that passion to them and let them know, I think, too, when you're working as a musician in a band, it's a team. Mm. It's not about me. I mean, one of the things I learned early on is, how to work, the most important thing is to accompany.
Yeah.
Accompany, 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 accompany. If you become a really good soloist, kudos to you. Do it when the time comes.
Right.
But I played with musicians who completely overstep everything, and they step all over because of, I guess ego. It's not about ego. It's about, it's like in sports, watching a good basketball team.
Exactly.
Watching either the Spurs or the Golden State Warriors when they're at their best,
right.
And you see how everybody's involved moving the ball so they can win. Same thing with music. It's supporting each other, learning how to accompany each other, learning how to give it up, and give it up, freely, because you want, if those people don't excel, then you're not going to win.
Yeah.
And when it comes time, for you, then you excel. I play with, just to give you an example, and it's all wanting to do that, I think. I played, it was years back with a great bass player. And I'm taking a solo, and he's taking a solo with me. So I just stopped. I said, well, you know what? You take the solo. Go ahead. I mean, because I'm trying, if you're soloing, I'm going to try to accompany you.
Right.
And make you shine.
Right.
Because ultimately, that's what the audience buys into. You know what I mean? Your commitment to what's happening as a group and as a player too. So you have to be committed to what you're playing. It's not easy because it takes a lot of self-introspection and a lot of studying personality in terms of, what fits best in a musical setting, in any kind of musical setting that you're in, because everybody comes with their own baggage and their own ego. It's a lifelong process, Kevin. It's not easy. But again, I wouldn't trade it for anything, bro.
You don't have to give any names, but when you deal with tough personalities, different artists that you work with, how do you go about doing that?
I always tell everybody I'm a product of having worked with the best and the worst. So thank God, as you get older, you've built a level of respect and a reputation where I'm not involved in those situations almost ever, because I'm usually the one who's dictating the situation for the most part.
Yeah.
Every now and then, if I go to another situation, then I completely put myself into the team player aspect. You know what I mean? Over here, I was just recently doing a gig with somebody who I love, Daideng Santa Maria, the violinist. It's her gig. I'm here to support her. It's not my gig. I'm here to make her shine. So I'm doing whatever I need to do to help her ultimately, you know, and I'm happy to do that. But I've worked with a lot of not so great band leaders, but all that's part of the learning process too. You learn, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like that. I want to be like that, you know. And everybody, you know, nobody's perfect, you know. There's only one person that's perfect, and, you know, he's up there.
Exactly.
So we try to be perfect, but the truth of the matter is all you could do is try your best. But I've worked with some pretty terrible band leaders over the years, and not recently. I'm talking about when I first came up, in the first 10, 15 years of my life, you know, that it was all about them. It was all about how much money they can make. It was all about them not paying people what they're supposed to. All kind of aspects, not being responsible, showing up with shoddy music. It could lead to so many aspects of what it takes to be a good musician and a good band leader. And we can have a, you know, a whole conversation about that and what it takes. But so for me, again, when I'm not in those situations anymore. Thank God, you know, knock on wood. I'm not in those situations. I'm usually working with people who are professional, who get it, who understand, and they want everybody to be able to do well. And, cause that's what the audience is going to take. You know what I mean? The audiences can sense that.
Right.
And they can sense when somebody's, you know, totally ego driven and it's about them. And, right. Sometimes, you know, if you're the focal point, if you're a band leader, you're a singer, and you think it's about you, well, it's not about you all the time. You know, it's about everybody who's working with you. So,
yeah. No, that's good. That's good. Yeah. You've won 3 Grammys.
That's correct.
What's it like?
Well, it's funny because I remember the first time we were nominated. This is another interesting story. And I'm sitting in the audience, and they were going through the categories of, you know, announcing the winners for different. And one of the categories, the winner was the Blind Boys of Alabama. And I'm sitting there, and I see this guy get up from his chair and walk up these long steps all the way to the top of the steps. And he grabs the mic, and he says, "Took me 30 years to walk up those steps." That's deep. I mean, it completely touched my heart. Because at that time, I was going like, well, that's kind of like me, you know? So that's a heavy statement.
Yeah.
So the first time we won, I was crying just because at that time I had worked, you know, I've been in this business for over 30 years and working with so many people in so many situations to finally get some type of acknowledgement, you know, on a world level like that. Mm. There's no substitute and you don't make any money, but I mean, it does give you a sense of credibility in the eyes of the world in terms of, you know, an accomplishment that is kind of important.
Yeah.
So since then, I've won 2 more, and it's the same. I feel totally vindicated in terms of all the hard work, all the bad times, all the paying of dues that go with all the good stuff as well, you know, falls into what that Grammy is about. It's orgullo, brother.
Yeah.
Orgullo, pride.
Yeah.
And I take a lot of pride in, you know, even now, all these years later, keeping the music on the pedestal I feel it merits to be on in terms of integrity, honestly, quality. You know, people ask me, we put on a new record. So I have a friend of mine going, okay, so what's new? What's new on the new record? And jokingly, I said, nothing. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not going to all of a sudden record something that's out of my, you know.
Yeah.
So you're going to record a reggaeton? No. You're going to record a bachata? No. You know what I mean? It's not what I do. That's not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it to be commercial. I'm doing it to record music that I walk away from the studio and I absolutely love.
Yeah.
And you know what? The feeling of that, you can't substitute it, because I don't go back in the past at all, but somebody will be playing something. I mean, any of the Ray Barreto records, go listen to them. Go listen to Fuerza Gigante. Go listen to Reconstruction. Go listen to Rhythm Alive. Listen to those records. They're badass.
Yeah.
I mean, badass.
Yeah.
So I could be anywhere. Now those records are, you know, 30 years old, and I go like, oh. Yeah. Or the Ruben Blades stuff.
Right.
Like, damn. Somebody told me, I have a few arrangers that I use in our band, you know, not too many, but... And he says, oh, why don't, you know, talking about what song could we do? He says, why don't you do Ella Seconde, you know, we did that with Ruben Blades. I said, coño, Ella Seconde. I said, maybe, yeah, let me listen to it. I forgot about it. I heard it. He says, man, that song blew me away. That was one of the songs that made me want to get into music. And I heard it and went like,
wow.
He says, you took one of the most beautiful solos. And I went like, and I heard it. So for me, there's nothing like that satisfaction. Yeah. And I'll give you another story. Recently, I was in Mexico last year. I was in Mexico, and I have this driver drive me to all the interviews. And we're stuck in traffic. Mexico City, the traffic is worse than LA.
Yeah.
So he tells me, so he's playing all the salsa music nonstop for an hour. We're stuck in traffic. And he hasn't played one Spanish Harlem Orchestra song. I said, you're playing all this music. You haven't played one Spanish Harlem Orchestra. Like, dude. He went like, oh, maestro, disculpa. And he goes into his glove compartment. He pulls out a thumb drive.
Oh, wow.
He puts out a thumb drive.
Yeah.
And he puts it in, and it was all Spanish Harlem. So for the next hour, we listen to all the Spanish Harlem Orchestra, one by one, stuff that I don't hear anymore. The first record, the second record, the third record. And I'm going like, wow.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to the performances. I'm listening to the singers. Mm-hmm. I'm listening to the solos. I'm listening to my solos. It's kick ass.
Yeah.
So there's no, you can't, that, you know, there's no amount of money that can replace that feeling.
Yeah.
For me, that's what it's about. Stuff that you've done that was done with love, passion, integrity. And that's what translates to me, at least when I can hang my hat at the end of the day to that. You know, I could listen to almost anything that I've done now and go like, wow, that's pretty cool. Sounds great. So
what do you say still inspires you today to continue doing music at the level that you are doing it now?
What inspires me today? It's funny because somebody asked me, so, you know, because like my quintet record is all original music. It's all my songs.
Yeah.
And somebody was asking, so what inspires you to write these songs, you know? And I go, well, really, a check and a deadline. Mainly a deadline, not a check. It's when I get into, like, I got to do something, boom, I'm inspired. And before you know it, once I start, once the thread is there, then I'm off.
Yeah.
And till it's not, you know, till it's not finished, until it's finished, I'm like entranced into the whole, you know, being a slave to the work. So what inspires me is to keep creating good music, you know, to keep sharing that with musicians and audiences.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it doesn't get better than that. When I share it with good musicians, whether it be in New York or LA or wherever I am, you know what I mean? To be able to get on a stage and everybody goes like, you know what I mean? So I have a friend of mine that always says, referring to my music, something that comes out of him, I see him posted on Facebook all the time. Otro nivel. Mm. Otro nivel. Higher level. You know, so I feel like, yeah, you know, it is on a higher level, you know, the stuff we're trying to do.
Yeah.
In the realm of, you know, our genre, and whether it be salsa, jazz, Latin jazz, or the music that we're trying to put out. So, yeah, I would say to keep creating good music with great musicians and impacting audiences.
That's good.
Continues to inspire me.
The live performances that you do with Spanish Harlem Orchestra, at the end, everybody always wants an encore. Do you go through a list of some of your hit songs and decide, okay, this is the one, because you have so many good ones. How do you go about, like, you know, when delivering that?
Well, we have a set list, because I want to be clear, you know, depending on where we are, the audience, I want to be clear on what we're going to do and that everybody's clear and they have a set list so we know what the show is. And if there's room for freedom, it would be, I would say, we might do this, this, or that as the encore. Just keep it, you know.
Yeah.
And then then when the audience is clapping, I said, I'll make a decision. Let's go with this song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it depends on, you know, what inspires me at the moment, what moves me at the moment. I usually try to make good decisions, you know, that what I feel are good decisions.
Right.
You don't always get it right, you know, but you try to come from a real, genuine, honest place about making those decisions. It's a cool thing.
Yeah. What advice do you have for the beginning musician? Those that are trying to get their careers going, those that are trying to, you know, become an arranger, become a composer, producer, these different things in music that you can be. What's your advice for them?
I would say to, you know, to work through the insecurities and the down parts of what it means to be that, because everybody know that, everybody has them.
Yeah.
Everybody is going to go through that and just accept that as part of the process and, you know, have a sense of perseverance, to persevere through all of it and to keep working at it, you know, and get yourself in as many different situations as possible, networking, you know, with people maybe that are even outside of your reach musically, but, you know, reach out to them and see where that leads to, because you never know where something will lead to in terms of a connection, in terms of inspiration, in terms of something that's going to drive you forward. So I would say, persevere, work through all the BS that you have to deal with, work through the BS of the business, because it's ultimately not about the business. It's about you wanting to create something valid with, you know, the music, and find your space and find your place in terms of where you fit in all of this stuff and try to keep working at it and surround yourself with good people. Because there's always going to be negative people out there. There's always going to be people with opinions, you know what I mean? And you know, you listen, talk less and listen, and formulate your own feeling and concept as to where you think you might want to go. And you'd be surprised what, you know, little thing may inspire you.
Yeah.
You know, a little situation. Go check out live music, because that's always an inspiration when you see other great musicians.
Right.
There's
right.
a lot of great musicians. You know, you could go like, wow, man. You know, before you know it, you might be even playing with them.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. When I get to play with somebody new that I know, you know, I go like, wow, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And know that, you know, we're on the same level.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So,
what's your opinion on value, especially in the music world? How do you go about ensuring that you feel valued, your people that are working with you feel valued? How do you go about doing that?
Well, I think part of that is the people that are hiring you, you know, that you set the bar at a certain level in terms of your expectations. Because if you don't let them know your expectations, they might set it over here. They might set it over here, or they might not give two bits about what you, you know. So when that bar is set here, even a simple thing as if you look at the tech writer with Spanish Harlem Orchestra, it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
You know, when we go anywhere in the world, anywhere, they're looking at it. Professionals are looking at it, going like, okay, they want this, they want that,
right.
they want that. And I'm really detailed about, so when somebody says, oh, well, you didn't, I said, no, don't say that. Look at here.
Yeah.
Page 3, line 7, what does it say there? So I'm pretty clear what's on there, what we asked for. And part of that is the treatment of the musicians, you know what I mean? And also have quality people. So they, when they're dealing with us, they know that they're dealing with professionals. They're dealing with people who are intelligent, who are clear, who don't come with an ego, because it's not about putting our ego on anybody, but we have certain expectations. I said, it's pretty clear. I asked for an acoustic grand piano, a 7-foot, either Yamaha or Steinway, or, you know what I mean? So you come up with a keyboard or something, unless they have to run it by me first, say, hey, we have an issue with this. And then
right.
automatically, and on the level of, you know, the art world, that's the way it functions.
Right.
People already know this, you know, Spanish Harlem Orchestra, we ask for 13 single rooms. It's 13 yeah. musicians. Mm-hmm. I give my musicians the ultimate respect. It's not easy getting 13 single rooms.
Right.
Occasionally, it might become an issue. And I try to work around it where I say, well, I'll pay for 6 rooms or something if that could be done. Or it's never an issue because people get it. You're the yeah. Carpenter Center, you mentioned the Carpenter Center. They're looking at it. They go, yeah, no problem. This is a hotel. You guys, we got 13 rooms for you. Whatever. Oh, you asked for a dinner. This is what we asked for in a dinner. Mm-hmm. You know, without, you know, not, you know, we don't want green M&Ms and red M&Ms, yeah, nothing like that. You know, the old.
Yeah. Who did that? Who was it?
I don't know. You know, those rock bands.
It was a rock band, right?
Which in their case, maybe they can, you know, they can ask for it because they're generating millions of dollars. So if you're generating millions of dollars and you want to take it to that level, I would never take it to that level. Yeah. But I certainly could ask for what I feel comfortable because you want to be able to feel comfortable.
Right.
You're dealing with so many things. You want to be able to, hey, one of the things I learned when I worked with Paul Simon, you know, I was Paul Simon's musical director as well, for people who may not know that. And do you know who Paul Simon is?
Yes, of course. Yeah, of course.
Do you know who Paul Simon is? You? Okay. So Paul, and I worked with him for 3 years, and I tell people I earned my doctorate's degree in musical theater working on that show. It was amazing. But he just seeing the way he works, first of all, he's filthy rich, right? And he would be clear. He says, you know, on exactly whatever it was. And he told me, okay, you're going to need a lawyer representative. You got one? Because if not, you got to get one. And then he would say, is it cool? You signed a contract? We cool? Okay, now let's go to work. I mean, once the business is taken care of, now let's be comfortable and do what we need to do.
Right.
And that's what I put out to people. So the people who already call my number, they kind of, or email me, they kind of know what I'm about already in terms of what I ask for, you know, to be able to work comfortably in an artistic environment.
Yeah.
And it's not out of the ordinary of what people in my position ask for.
Yeah.
But, you know, we need to work comfortably and we need to be comfortable and we need to feel good to get up on that stage and transmit the love and the passion that we have in our hearts for what we do.
That's good.
So
awesome.
Hope that answers your question.
No, that's great. That's awesome. Oscar Hernandez, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kevin.
You know, it's been awesome. Thank you for sharing all your stories. And
pleasure. For those of you viewers, keep supporting the music. Keep supporting live music. There's nothing like it. And para nuestra gente de habla español, si están allá afuera, apoyen a lo nuestro. Los queremos, le agradecemos el apoyo y le deseamos bendiciones. Gracias.
Band leader with Spanish Harlem Orchestra. Thank you so much for your time, Oscar. Really appreciate it, sir.
Got it, bro.
Great time. All right, you guys.
Thanks for checking out episode number 10 with Oscar Hernandez. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Most of the episode was spent talking about his career, his life, and the advice that he has for you guys that are trying to become band leaders, entrepreneurs, composers, arrangers, all these different qualities of a musician. Episode number 11 comes out next week with a very amazing and extraordinary drummer, someone that I've looked up to for many years, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So stay tuned for that, and until then,
have a great week.